Alessandro, welcome to Spaghetti Code.
Thank you, Marco.
How are you?
Really appreciate it. I'm good. How are you?
Very good. You know, days are getting longer, so I feel much more energized. It's still a couple of months into winter, but we're gonna make it.
Yeah, we're gonna make it, I'm sure. And I'm sure, you know, our guest today is gonna help us go through today by talking about very, very interesting stuff related to tech strategy and innovation.
Yeah. Today we have the pleasure of having with us Aviv Ben-Yosef. Aviv is a tech executive coach and author with a lot of experience in helping team achieving high performance and quality. Welcome, Yosef.
Welcome, Aviv.
Thank you. Hey, and thank you for having me, guys.
So, Aviv, can you tell us a bit more about what you do? And
sure. So I come from a very hands-on background. Like I learned to code when I was 9 or something like that. And ever since, I've been enamored with computers and coding and the fact that we can make, you know, this magical box do things just because we type some words in it and it actually listens to us, or mostly listens to us. And from then, it was just a love story. So, you know, I was a teenage hacker. Turns out if that's what you are in Israel, chances are you're going to get enlisted to the Israeli equivalent of the NSA, which was nice. And after that, I worked, you know, IBM, startups, everything. And for the past 10, 11 years, I've been independent. At the beginning, I was doing freelancing, CTO as a service with a bunch of startups here in Israel and then more globally. And for the past 4 or 5 years, I've transitioned from doing the fractional CTO thing to mostly working with companies that have these tech executives and helping them grow, because I decided I don't want to be the band-aid that you put on when things don't work. I actually have a lot more fun working with companies where you already have good people, but you're trying to push towards great. So that's what I've been doing. And for the past 4 years, I've been working with companies in Israel, Europe, and North America, trying to triple impact per engineer, meaning not that coders need to be typing 3 times faster, but just that I think we can all make our productivity go way up if we just learn how to do the right things. That means not write code that looks nice, but no one needs it. Learn when to ask the right questions, etc.
Ah, that's amazing. And before, when we talked about this episode, you know, there were plenty of topics we could discuss. But, you know, as the title of the episode said, we decided to talk about tech strategy. Can you start telling us a bit, how do you see tech strategy? What is a tech strategy? And do we really need a tech strategy?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll say for people who might not know the term, tech strategy is oftentimes what I see CTOs or VP of R&D, VP of engineering say that they're working on, which is sort of their own strategy for what they want their teams to do, their organizations to do in the next year or so. And while I think it's good for leaders to have their own things, their own initiatives that they want to push, I always tell my clients that if you're working on a tech strategy, usually what that means is that you are disconnected from the real strategy up there. It's like, you know, when one of my kids wants something and, you know, I'm prepping dinner and they want to help me, I give them, you know, a cucumber and tell them to just, you know, pretend they're cutting it so I can do what I want to do really. And that's a bit like what I feel about most tech strategies. So, yeah, you guys do that. You can refactor this, move that, research this, but it doesn't really matter. It's not connected to the root of the business. Now, if you're working in... It's becoming harder and harder. I used to have examples of companies that have nothing to do with modern technology, like insurance, etc. But nowadays, everything's becoming tech-related. But if you're working in some old, obsolete area where there's no tech really, and you're essentially IT, you're not creating anything innovative. You're just, you know, keeping the computers running and helping make sure the printers work. Okay, go and, you know, go off and have your tech strategy. But if you're genuinely a tech leader an executive director, whatever. I don't care about the specific title. I believe that you shouldn't be working on your own tech strategy, which essentially puts you in a corner and you just play with that. But the company, and again, most companies nowadays, I think you'd agree, guys, are tech companies, and tech should be a very prominent tenet of their strategy. That means that the strategy has to be tech-driven first. So you need to be actually in the room where those decisions are being made, where the roadmap is being shaped, and help create that strategy, you know, the strategy. And that might have all sorts of different tech initiatives in it, embedded and intertwined with the product, with the sales, with the marketing. And then from that, you should be deciding what your organization is going to focus on this year. But you shouldn't be disconnected, because also imagine what it means if you have a tech strategy and a marketing strategy and you know, and whatever strategy, it means that you have no strategy. You have a bunch of different organizations, each pulling and running in a different direction. And strategy, by definition, should mean focus, and therefore we need one strategy and everything else has to funnel out of that.
And how do you ensure this kind of approach or cross-functional approach, right? Because it's not just about the tech that we do for the sake of doing tech, right? It's what we need, what the organization needs, what the business needs eventually. Tech is mean to achieve some goal from an organizational and business point of view. So how do you make sure that the strategy that you take from a technological point of view reconcile with the business goals?
Yeah, that's a great question. What I think that might be missing for many people is that as a tech executive, and now tech executive can mean a lot of things. Sometimes it's you were an employee in a company and you just went up and up and up, and eventually you're now the VP or the CTO. Other times I see it also even when I'm working with a co-founder CTO, and still that tech executive, in both cases, they might feel like I'm the tech person, right? In air quotes. I'm not supposed to be in the room with the business people, or I don't understand anything about that. I shouldn't be involved. Sometimes it's sort of an imposter syndrome. We feel like I have no part there because I don't want to seem stupid. And other times it's from the other direction where it's like, this is a waste of my time. I should be focusing on tech. Anytime I'm talking about or hearing about all those businessy stuff is a waste of my time. And I would say that both of those are a complete mistake. When you're an executive, any sort of an executive, it means that you have to think about the business, right? No one has you in the company because you are why they have beautiful code, right? No one cares about your code. If they could replace all of your organization with ChatGPT, they would have done it 5 days ago. You're there to help get the business results. And therefore, as an executive, you have this sort of responsibility to realize that you know, let's think about the tech executive thing. Two words. I'm sure most people here listening who are tech executives have the tech part nailed down. They do it perfectly. The executive part is what they need to work on. What's the difference between an executive and just, you know, a glorified manager? Is that you are actually actively taking part in the leadership stewardship of the company. So if you are regularly in those meetings where we decide about what's going on, if you are in board meetings, you then get all the context that you need in order to understand the business and what's happening. And then when you come up with ideas, those are a lot more likely to be in line with what the company actually needs. So you're not gonna, for example, suggest this big refactor because it looks cool or because your team really doesn't want to work in Angular anymore and they want to move to React, but you're going to do it if you can see that this actually can help you reach that business goal, get the cost down, get better talent, whatever. If you can actually make the business case and therefore ensure that what you're suggesting is in line with what the company needs right now, and maybe say, no, actually, you know what? I know this Angular legacy code base sucks. We'll only be able to get there in 6 months because right now what's really important is this or that. And that's what leadership is about. That's what you need to be doing. So if you're a CTO right now that's listening and don't know what to do, I would start with elbowing your way if needed. So you're in the room where we're talking about those things. You need to be an active participant in board meetings. And like, you know, in my books, I have full chapters about what am I doing in a board meeting? Who should I be talking about? How do I prepare? What do I bring? You know, that sort of stuff. And you need to do that because, again, that's the role. Either you have a vanity title that doesn't mean you're really a chief whatever, or this is it. This is what you're doing. And it means that you have to get this executive part nailed down. And it takes a while, but it's possible. And I think the most interesting part is what happens if, for example, the CEO doesn't view you like this. And that's, you know, that's a whole different story. I actually have a story about an Italian CTO, I can tell you, that had probably the worst experience I can talk about. He told me that he was a CTO of a company, a startup. He wasn't a co-founder. And one day he was notified as part of the entire leadership team being notified. Oh, by the way, we are acquiring that company because of its technology. And we're going to be embedding that into our product. And that's it. It's already done. We're going to, you know, we have everything signed. We're going to just do it. And he was like, we just acquired a company for their technology. I'm the CTO. I have no idea, you know, what their technology is based on. How is it going to work? And what do you know? It was an entirely different tech stack. It was almost impossible to just connect things and, you know, actually benefit from them. The fact that no real due diligence was done actually caused the people being acquired be like, you know, is this the company I want to be in? And therefore, most of the tech team they acquired ended up leaving, you know, a complete and utter failure. And that's what you get when you don't let your tech executives be in the room, or when you as an executive don't push yourself there. So it might be hard. Yeah,
that's extremely interesting, actually. And I was wondering, why do you think those type of behavior or those type of situations still happen? I was thinking about it many times, right? And one of the thing I thought of is that we are still perceived as the nerd or the geeks, you know, in the best case scenario. And so we are still perceived as those people that are detached from the real world, you know, maybe very, very smart or whatever, but they are not into the real world. You know, they just do techy stuff and that's what they do. You know, they are a labor pool, basically. We use them as we need. And that's it. But it seems simplified. I mean, it seems a simplification of the reality. What's your point of view on that?
Yeah. So I think that there are actually a few things here in place. One is that sometimes, especially if you're an employee, that might be similar to what you're describing. People view you as the nerd because what they had in mind or the kind of people they worked with in the past were those nerds. Now, I say embrace being a nerd. You're not going to pretend you're not a nerd. You know, I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. The first chapter of my latest book is Geeks in the Boardroom. Because what I'm saying is not they're not geeks. We are geeks, and yet we need to be in the boardroom. And I think that you need to be doing expectation setting. For example, if you're interviewing for a position or for a promotion, you need to not just be talking about your tech background, but also ask questions about the business. Show that you understand it. Show that you want to understand it. So that from the get-go, they realize, okay, this person is different. That's not, you know, the typical sit-in-the-corner nerd. This is someone who talks business, who asks about those numbers, etc. So do the setting of the expectations from the get-go. Second is that sometimes what I see, I work, you know, half of my clients are CEOs, and oftentimes what I'm seeing from them, even when they're talking about their own co-founder, their own partners, is that they feel like the CTO, for example, is not taking charge. As far as I'm concerned, as a CEO, come to me, tell me we need to do X because of Y, and if it makes sense to me, I'm like, yeah, go ahead, take it. It's yours, you know, whatever resources you need, just do it, right? Because what you're doing essentially is coming to the CEO, telling them, here's something on your plate. I want to take it from you. I want to do it. Let me. And no one essentially tells you, no, leave it on my plate. I want to be overwhelmed. But people don't do it because we have imposter syndrome, because we pigeonhole ourselves. We put ourselves in a box and we think that we're only supposed to be doing this with that. And I believe that once you make the switch mentally and you start talking about business and you start having regular conversations with your peers, you know, the CMO or the CRO, whatever, and you actually create real relationships and rapport with them, then slowly you become a genuine executive in the company and can actually sway things. And I really like this example of a wildcard CTO, which I've seen a lot of times. And maybe you guys have seen it in your past when you work in a company and it starts with a CEO, CTO. And after a while, the CTO brings in a VP of engineering and a VP of product. And after a year or two, the CTO is like looking around like, what am I doing? Like, I have a good VP here and a good VP there. They don't need me. I'm like, I'm just a hub in between. And then some CTOs get this identity crisis and don't know what to do. But the good ones have this switch where they turn into wildcards and they just do whatever is needed for the company. So I have a few clients where, you know, unicorn companies where the CTO 6 months is helping make the product organization better, 6 months working on making the sales organization better, 6 months just doing installations as a field CTO because we see that we have an issue with this or that type of client, whatever. And they just go from one problem to the next. And this is like a joker, right? A joker as in the playing card, something that you can use anywhere and can always help you. And that's magical. But you need to be okay with allowing yourself to make that switch. And until you make that, people are going to view you as the nerd. If you're thinking you're the nerd, okay? And if you make the switch, it's going to be a lot easier. It's not going to work in 100% of the companies. I've worked with people where eventually I told them, you know, this is not the right place for you because it seems like you have a clear cap here and they don't want to treat you as an executive. If that's the case, you know, maybe you need to be moving on. But really, I believe 80-90% of the time when you take this agency where you allow yourself to do it, people actually welcome it because it's just helping everyone around.
This is really interesting, Aviv, and it makes me think. I'm really passionate about what you said at the beginning, which is, you know, start with the actual business strategy, and that's where you have to be. You have to contribute to that, even as a tech leader. You know, you have to contribute to that first. But still, I think there is a level of detail issue whereby once you have contributed to the root business strategy, you have to go back to your tech department and be able to translate that business tech strategy into pillars for the people that, you know, you work with so that they can really, you know, build within the constraints that you believe are going to make, you know, your organization supporting at best the business strategy. Is this something you help actually, you know, CTOs and leaders with? Is this something that happens? Is my interpretation correct, or do you see anything different?
What you just asked is something that I actually see a lot and have to help people a lot with. When I'm working with a tech executive, oftentimes we need to decide on their own priorities, what they want to focus on for the next quarter. And then we take their own personal goals, their career goals, the business goals, combine all of those together and come up with the priorities. What do you as the VP need to be focusing on for the next quarter? That might be taking quality up because you have issues or customer success can't handle the load. And we're like, okay, let's automate stuff when it comes to errors, or let's improve our quality. It might be about you need to spin up a new team or a new location, or your director is leaving and you need to find someone else to replace them. You know, those things that might be big. And it might be about how do we use the technological advantage / leverage that we have. So for example, you know, engineers, they read something on Hacker News and they want to play with it, right? It looks shiny, it looks cool, a new GitHub repo with something, yeah, and you want to try it. And that's great. I like people who have the passion. However, you can't let people do that every day. And we tend to do a lot of things that are just shiny but don't really matter. Like, we're just adding more complexity into the system and we didn't get really any benefit as a business. And I believe that as CTOs, if you want to make sure that the technology part and all the initiatives align with the business, we need to once you have this understanding of the business that we started with, you need to help convey it to your team so they actually have the context as well. Not all of it, of course. They cannot all be CTOs in mind, but connect them more. And then once you do that, this is something magical that I've seen in many companies. Once I have a bit of the context, once I understand what our clients need or what our competitors are doing and how we're trying to be better, etc., then what you get is that when people have those ideas, more often the ideas they have are actually likely to be worthwhile. So, you know, you have your shower thoughts. I'm talking about ideas that you get in the shower. Don't get me wrong. So you're thinking about something, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can fix that bug. Now I get this. Or maybe we can do this or that. When people are connected to the business, you are more likely to have shower thoughts that lead to, oh, I think that might be cool because it can help that use case or help that salesperson or help that sort of client. And that's what I want. And that's your role, to convey enough of the context to help people understand and know so that when they come up with ideas, it's not just, oh, that's a cool new repair or I saw on Hacker News. It's, I think we can do this. And this is when I talk a lot to companies about habitual innovation, not having a hackathon once a year, but actually bringing innovation to the table regularly. It's mostly around this, how we make people understand what sorts of ideas are worth it for the company. And then all of a sudden, your creativity can actually be used a lot more.
So is this, I want to give maybe for our audience some concrete examples of tech strategy. And you talked about habitual innovation, which might perfectly fit, you know, a tech strategy. Can you give an example of a few, I guess, major pillars that should be included in a tech strategy when, you know, maybe from your own experience working with companies?
Yeah, sure. So we're going to put the, you know, the tech strategy itself part aside, your company has a strategy. Usually that strategy should have some business objectives, and those should pretty immediately turn into at least 80% of what your team is doing when it comes to business goals that we're after. So we have OKRs or whatever, and those turn into guidance for the features or the sorts of metrics we want to work on, and then R&D with product and with whoever else decides on how we're going to try and get there. And that's an implementation of the strategy by the tech team. But you also have some of your tech initiatives, and those actually need to make sense. So when I'm looking at that, I split that into what our talent needs and what might be our opportunities. All right. So we have the business stuff, and then I'm putting aside the two more longer term stuff. Talent is, I'm fine with sometimes doing things just because I think it will make our people smarter, more robust, more creative, and help them grow, because you need to do that. You need to invest in your people. And that might be, for example, just training. It might be, are we doing brain swaps within the company where people go, you know, for a sprint, join a different team once a quarter, something like that. And those are things that harm your velocity because you're not letting people stay at their expertise zone. And for time to time, you move them, but it really pays off long term. And the second, you know, part here, other than the talent, is the leverage. And that's where the habitual innovation comes into play, where I want to see how we can actually let our brilliant, brilliant engineers, right? We're interviewing them to bring the brightest people we can find to come to the company. We pay them a good amount of money, hopefully. And then what do? We told them to switch off their creativity and just do what Jira tells them day in, day out, the whole year. And I hate that. What I think we need to be doing is to make room for their innovation. And once they have that context and they understand the business, I try and make room for what I call tech capital. Tech capital is the exact opposite of tech debt, right? Tech debt is, as with any debt, there's a clear limit to how much you can clean tech debt, because you have an X amount of it. And sometimes, no matter how much you keep fixing it, it doesn't matter anymore. It's just something you do because it makes you feel nice, but it doesn't matter. And tech capital is actually capless because you can gain as much capital as possible. You can just keep pushing. And tech capital, for example, is not another feature. It's, for example, and these are real examples for my clients, usually internal tooling and new capabilities that make people in the company have little superpowers. So I saw someone who saw what the sales engineers were doing manually for clients and said, you know, I think I can write a quick DSL domain specific language to actually make the config part a lot faster, save you, the sales engineer, a bunch of mistakes, and actually let the new clients do things on their own and they would feel more empowered. And the CTO said, sure, go ahead, try it. That engineer created a POC and boom, the amount of time sales engineers had to spend with new POCs dropped by 80%. That's a superpower for your sales engineering. Another example was engineers. You know, the best type of engineer is the lazy engineer. The one that doesn't say, yeah, I can do that to you for you real quick, is the one that says, how can I stop doing this? And not, you know, like the Dilbert way of unplugging the computer, but trying to find a way to just solve it once and for all. And the marketing team kept coming to them and asking them, you know, I need to tweak this email and that flow because we want to test this now and then this and that. And one of the engineers in the startup I was working with just had enough. And she said, okay, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to create a very nice editor. I'm going to create a very simple system. And she started working on it. And then she realized, oh, I can actually just plug this API and let them edit all their marketing flow for our emails using that SaaS. She did that. And the marketing people, their heads like exploded. You know, that mind-blown GIF. They couldn't even imagine that that was possible, that they could do these things on their own without having to nag engineers to change this, change that, wait for it to be deployed, etc. And now they could just run as many experiments as they could think of. And that made that a force multiplier for marketing. Marketing ran faster, business got more value. So sometimes we need to realize that engineers aren't just good for creating features that help our clients, but actually can help the people within the company and sort of make the entire company better. Recently, in the past 6 months, more people are realizing it because AI everywhere, and people realize, oh, I can try this and that. But even before that, it was possible. And now I think it's just getting a lot more interesting. We have so many new different avenues for creating tech capital, and the companies that are doing it, I think, are going to really, really have a good time in a year or so when you know, they start seeing the fruit of the effort.
That's brilliant. I think this was a great walkthrough, you know, some concrete examples, really inspiring, actually, for the companies out there.
One thing you mentioned is about the innovation. And, you know, the example you made is the typical hackathon that is done every 6 months or every year even. This is something that I've seen done many times, and usually nothing come out of it. It's more a team building event than an actual innovation space. Do you have any other approach that leader can take to foster this type of innovation into the teams? I mean, what they can actually do and what type of initiatives they can put in place to allow people to continuously innovate?
Yeah, so I think that the hackathons are, as you said, mostly good for team building and an exercise to eat pizza together. But if you want to see real innovation, what I do with my clients is try and move towards what I call intermissions. Some companies call it innovation weeks, sabbaticals, whatever you want to call it. And that means that it can still be once every 6 months, but ideally it's more like once a quarter, once every 4 months, that you take a week where your team is working together on something. Because a week is almost, for most companies, it's a lot closer to a real sprint. It means you can actually do things. It's not a POC that you throw on the wall in a couple of hours and that's it. It's something that you actually can do properly. You can, you know, write the tests if needed. You can deploy it, etc. And it's sort of a mini sprint that's focused on innovative stuff. So it's not stuff the product asks you to do. Engineers know, 2 months ahead of time, that their intermission is going to come up. We know that it's at the end of the quarter, for example, and they start thinking and, you know, each when it really works. I know that most engineers have their own personal backlog about different experiments they want to do and ideas. And then you have the intermission, and the context is the things we do might fail. That's fine. I'm okay with at the end of the week, you say, you know, we tried that and just doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. We're continuing. We're just throwing it away. As long as it was a good bet, right? As long as when we looked at it, we said, if it works, it's going to be worth it. And the chances of it working aren't too small, because you get real innovation only when you're okay with some failure. If everything you have in a hackathon is just a bunch of features and little experiments that you know are going to work, you just need the time, it's not innovation. It's just, no, different types of tasks. Innovation, creativity means it just might not work and we need to be okay with it. And second, I really try and focus the team on not just doing tech that stuff, but again, the tech capital mindset. Think about things that can actually help, even if it's small things that you think can help the client. Don't replace product, right? I'm not saying, you know, I saw one guy that just decided, here's a feature that I really want for 6 months, and the product said, we don't want to do that, and I just tried to push it as part of the intermission. No, that's not going to work. You need to actually talk with product people, touch this product. You can talk to marketing if you try and create an internal tool for marketers. But once you do that, you can create real value internally. And the magic really happens after an intermission or two. And there are a few companies that have been doing this for like 4 or 5 years since my first book came out. And before that, when I started talking about this, and they said that eventually what started happening is that everyone else in the company, not the R&D team, everyone else know that this is coming. And what they do is, you know, the marketer that has an idea or the customer success person that keeps having the same issues knows that the intermission is coming. And then they start searching for engineering champions, and they actually try and pitch an idea to them. And they're like, will you do this in your intermission? And I think that's amazing, because that's like a marketplace of creativity within the company. And yeah, it takes some time to actually get there. Yeah, you need to have amazing relationships within the company, because if the engineers are in a silo, no one's going to come to them. No one's going to know they're doing this. You need to actually verbalize this, communicate it, show it to everyone. But if you do it within a quarter, two, three, you're going to see an amazing momentum picking up. And that's like, for me, it's magical. It means that the engineers are actually doing things that make their brains work and have, you know, make a healthy effort, not just do whatever GR told you.
Absolutely. In my case, I used always the hackathon as we said, a team building activity, mm-hmm. but also to come up with those POC that you were mentioning, but to create consensus around what we are trying to do. I mean, product was also involved into the hackathon, of course. And the let's say the contract was that once we had those type of POC or those type of initiatives, then we will need to find space to execute them or to bet, to take the bets on some of them, not all 100% of course of them, but on some of them during the you know, the normal working hours, the sprints, or we were using Kanban, but doesn't really matter. And the idea is to prioritize basically those projects. But as you said, you know, if things can go well and cannot go well, it's the conscious investment that you make into this type of activities that really matters, because it's an investment. So it can go well and it cannot go well. But the important is that you continuously and constantly invest, because it will pay out on the long term. That's the way I see it anyway. But, yep. You know, just to close, for our audience, you know, and I would like to know if you have any material that you would like to suggest them, like books or podcasts, of course, or blog posts and so forth.
Yeah, so you can read more, listen more. I've got videos, I've got a podcast and everything, all on my website, avivbenyosef.com. And specifically about what we just talked about, the innovation, if you go to my website or go to TechExecutiveOperatingSystem.com, that's my first book, you can just get for free the chapter about innovation and intermissions and everything, which I think might be interesting if you just listen to us and think that might be something that can work for us. You can just get that chapter for free there.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Aviv, to join us today. It's been a real pleasure, lots of insights.
I would have loved to explore so many topics. Yeah, thanks so much, Aviv. Yeah.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Marco. Thank you, Aviv.